What's up, everyone? Welcome to We Have Cool Friends. I'm your host today, Nick Scarpino, and we are joined by a very, very special guest. This man has had a career that has spanned almost actually more than four decades at this point. And I guarantee you know him from something. It's going to be so cool to go through his work and figure out what your touchstone is. I know I have a few touchstones too. Very excited to talk to him. Welcome to the show, Mr. Eric Roberts and Eliza Roberts, his wife, joining him as well.
Thank you.
Hey, how's it going? Before we get into the interview, Eric, I just have to tell everyone, quick shout out to our Patreon sponsors, Mohammed Mohammed and Owl Tribes. I mean, you guys are awesome holding it down out there. And as well, if you like this or anything we do, please make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel here on youtube.com/kindoffunny. Or if you're listening to this on iTunes or Spotify, subscribe however you subscribe there. Rate whatever you need to rate. That's all good. Of course, today's episode is brought to you by MeUndies, ExpressVPN, and HelloFresh, but we'll get to that just a little bit later. How you guys doing down in LA
these days? Thanks for asking.
Yeah, that's great. This is such a weird, we were talking earlier before we started and how odd this is that it's been a challenging set of circumstances, obviously, to do production, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. But it also opens up the opportunity for us to do cool stuff like this, because getting people out of LA is impossible. That doesn't seem to be a problem for you though, Eric. You travel everywhere to do stuff, and you have worked on a lot of projects over the last, 40 years. Is that correct?
42 years last I heard.
42 years. My God. Obviously, I have a lot of touchstones for you, and we're going to get into that in a second. But before we do, I want to just kind of start with how did you get into the film business to begin with?
Well, you become an actor for one of two reasons: to act and or be famous.
Right.
And I wanted to be both. I always wanted to be a movie star. How cool! And right. I've been acting since cognizance, and so. When I got old enough, I lit out for New York and basically got lucky.
So New York, why New York versus Los Angeles? Because now obviously LA is the place everyone wants to be. Well, everyone wants to be in their homes now, but you know, in normal times, you would normally hear go to LA. Why did you pick New York?
Well, you have a choice. You either go to LA or New York. And I was an East Coast guy. I'd only done plays. I'd done some TV, but very limited. I'd only done plays, and so let's go to New York and do more plays. And that's kind of what happened.
Interesting. And so obviously you came to fame in the late 70s, early 80s with projects like The King of Gypsies, Star 80, The Pope of Greenwich Village, and Runaway Train. What was that like? What was like Hollywood and LA like in the 80s?
It was drug fueled.
Okay.
You would arrive on your sets, and two of my first five movies, I can't say which ones, but you arrive on the set, and they would send you to their prop truck, where they had lines of cocaine out for everybody all day. And I can't talk when I do drugs, so I couldn't do drugs at work, so I would wait till after work.
That is that's crazy. I imagine that kind of complicated things sometimes for productions.
It did. Everybody from the producers to craft service were on that drug in those days. It was not addictive, and it was safe, and it was fun. So everybody was doing it.
Well, I'm sure it was fun. I don't know about the other two, obviously, but is that something that you, I mean, you don't have to comment on this at all, but is that something that you still see today? Is that something that's still prevalent, or is that not so much?
It has cycles. There was what's that drug that everybody's into for a bit? It was a pill with a good feeling name.
Oh, like Adderall or
not Adderall, but
Molly or ecstasy.
Everybody's on Adderall too.
Ecstasy.
Yeah. There was about 3 years where all the kids were on ecstasy. Yeah, and I was being offered ecstasy every set. Hey, you want some ecstasy? Sure, great. I love acting on ecstasy.
It's just so weird for me. Obviously, we don't do big level productions like that with a lot of money on the line. But you would think you would want the opposite, right? Where you'd want everyone to get a real good night's sleep the night before, come in fresh, and just get decent meals. Where does the drug fuel come from? Like, why do people want to indulge in that so much?
Well, you have to be so brave to be an actor. You have to let all your inhibitions down, and you have to charge. And sometimes a little added pick-me-up is the extra step that you want and or think you need.
Is that really where it goes down to? Because I see that a lot with celebrities who achieve that level of fame. And actually, you see it a lot with high-level performers across all industries. Notably, I follow fighting, and there's a guy named John Jones who keeps getting in trouble for that, you know, using cocaine or using steroids. And I think I have this theory that all the pressure of everything has to go somewhere. And for some people, I think, you know, they're able to find other outlets for it. But for a lot of people, it does go toward the party. Is that kind of crazy to say?
Well, I think it's more the type of the personality who's in that avenue is going to be that type of personality who's going to want the drugs, who's mm-hmm. going to want to party, who's going to want to feel freedom. It's all kind of tied into the personality.
Going from that, obviously you were partying a lot, but you still turned in some phenomenal performances in the 80s and obviously kept going. I mean, it never really slowed down. What was it like sort of transitioning from that, or when was the sort of breaking point of saying, like, I need to find a different outlet for all that pressure?
Well,
by the way, this started off way more intense than I thought it was going to. I was going to just talk about Best of the Best. We're going to get to that in a second, I promise.
Okay. In 1993, my wife and I had been together for 3 or 4 years, and she says to me, If you could do anything every day of your life, Eric, what would it be? I said, I'd be on a movie set every day. She goes, well, that's not going to happen. Then 2003 comes, and she goes, it's interesting. And people are buying their own cameras now, and they're calling in directly for you. And by 2008, we were getting at least a dozen offers every day from all over the world to come make movies for people. So she goes, you want to do this? You can be on a set every day. I said, let's go do it. So from 2008 to like 2018, I was making hundreds of movies all over the world and having so much fun, dude.
Dude, I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm looking at your IMDb credits, especially for the last like 10 years. My wife and I were watching some of your films over the weekend, and I was scrolling through, and she's like, what are you doing over there? I'm like, I'm still scrolling through Eric's, like, the last decade of his credits, because you can tell, and especially in some of the stuff you've done lately, that you're just having such a good time every time you do anything. And obviously, like, the dream of any actor is to work consistently and to be in notable work and fun stuff, and you're doing that. Do you think you're going to slow down at all in the next 10 years, or are you just going strong for another 20?
Well, my wife and I teach acting. And
oh, cool.
We call our method of acting working actor. It's a triple meaning, of course. And that's the fun, to be a working actor, to get a part, to break it down at your desk and then live it. And it's just, it's, I have seen the planet. I have the best job on the planet. And I know that. And I have somebody else who also knows it, who's my boss. So it's really a pleasure.
Is Eliza a tough employee to have?
All artists are.
Yeah.
But my main thrust, because my son is also a recording artist.
So it's his birthday today, Keaton Simons.
Hey, happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Keaton. You have to, it's really important for the artist to understand that there's a major production behind you, whether it's music or what we do, any media. There's a major production behind you, and it's not all about you. And there's a lot of compromise, and you really have to be part of the team. So that's not always the personality that really goes for that. But then, you know, so you watch their stuff to remind yourself of why you're doing this. But
back in the old days when there was film, it kind of like felt like it was all about the actor, the performer, the guy up front. That's how it felt. And we liked that. And then suddenly they took our medium away, no more film. We had HD, and the crew changed, and the cameras changed, and the shooting time changed. Everything changed, and it became almost a really focused your vocation. It became kind of a hobby. Mm. It was weird. It became easy and inadvertent, as opposed to specific and focused, and this is what we're doing. It became casual. And as you can see by episodic TV, it looks horrible. And they had the cameras look at everybody's faces. So even on the women, you're getting lots of neck. And on the old guys, you get lots of falling neck. And that's your center of frame now. That's where they shoot the actors now, is at their necks. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's ugly, it's not attractive, it's not personal. It's like everything became a big shoot and film, and it became heartbreaking. But I got over it with the quantity.
That's a really good mentality to have. But I mean, dialing it back a little bit, obviously you did a lot of very, very focused character-driven movies in the beginning of your career, and then kind of going into the later 80s, you started doing some kind of, I don't want to say blockbustery action kind of movies. Do you have a preference between either of those types of films?
It's all the same to me.
Yeah.
It's like it's like you're kissing. There are great kissers, there are okay kissers, but it's always nice to be kissed. It's the same thing with acting for me.
Okay, so we're gonna kick this off. One of my favorite films from the 80s was Best of the Best. And in a weird sort of karmic way, I was watching a documentary that you were actually a part of, you popped up in, called In Search of the Last Action Heroes, that I believe is on Amazon right now. It's a phenomenal documentary that goes through all of the eras of the 70s, 80s, and 90s action heroes, and how those changed from, you know, guys like Charles Bronson to then people like you who actually, well, I don't want to say Charles Bronson can't act, but we're going from the Arnold Schwarzeneggers to you, and you obviously, well, this is no disrespect to Mr. Schwarzenegger, but you have a lot more chops than he does. What was the experience of Best of the Best for you? Does that stick out as a positive experience for you?
It was like boys camp. It was so much fun. And Simon Reed kind of led the way with all that. He was Philip's brother. He was our bad guy with the patch.
Okay.
And he was kind of our fearless leader. And he choreographed all the fight scenes. And he was just a cool leader. And we just had fun. And somebody that I will always miss is
Chris Penn.
Chris Penn.
Thank you, honey. Is Chris Penn. I just loved him so much, and we had so much fun. He was such a good kickboxer. He was so much fun to spar with, and we just had a great relationship, and I really miss him.
I know what you mean about kind of having a surprising heart in that movie and a real performance. You know, he had a son, Louise Fletcher. There was that whole storyline. You could almost extract it from the movie, and it still would hold true. And what we notice, you probably are more in touch with the fans of that movie than we are, but what we notice is some people, that's what they loved about the movie. That's what they could relate to. For other people, it was about the amazing martial arts. The Reed brothers are just, you know, best of the best.
I mean, yeah.
Pretty great. And in fact, Idan, who played Eric's son, is a really, really good actor. And he happens to be Keaton's best friend. I mean, this is a coincidence. They were best friends.
And he's a real martial.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, before we met each other, they were best friends. But you're right, there was a real story there. And that made a difference.
And that's, I think, what I responded to. I think when I was, I watched it when I was a bit younger, and obviously, you know, growing up in the 80s, martial arts was the thing. And I remember specifically watching this movie and then thinking to myself, I used to train, I think it was Kenpo back in the day. And they said that I couldn't wear a black gi, like a black uniform, until I got my purple belt. And I remember specifically that you wore a black gi in Best of the Best and the American team wore all black. And I was like, I have to get a purple belt so that I can look like Eric Roberts in Best of the Best. I also grew my hair out. That did not work out well for me. That did not look nearly as good as your hair did in that film.
You look Ken Olin, so you're fine. You don't need to look like Eric. You look like Ken Olin, that works out.
Okay, I appreciate that. By the way, my wife, we were watching a bunch of movies over the weekend, and every time she came into the room, she was like, how does that man's hair get better? How does it keep getting better with age? And I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. What's the secret? I got to ask. What is it? And please don't say genetics. Please tell me you're taking something that I've never heard of for this hair.
No, I'm in the gym every day. So every day after gym, I wash my hair. And that's really all I do.
That's all it is.
If anything, he steals from a hotel. No, I mean, seriously.
I have hundreds of bottles of shampoo that are this big from hundreds of hotels.
Yeah.
And so that's my gym shampoo, all my stuff from hotels.
What is your, what's your preferred workout method? Are you doing, like, what do you do for workouts?
Well, actually, as I've gotten older, it's really changed, dude. I don't do any weights. I don't touch a weight anymore. I just do the elliptical to death. I do lots of elliptical and lots of stomach, lots of lower back. And
good.
When I have to take off my shirt for a movie, so I have to have some arms, I do two sets of 50 push-ups and have a little arm for half an hour, and that's all
little,
I do.
Get a little pump right before the shirtless scene. It's good.
I'm
smart.
No, I'm old, and they don't really expect it anymore. Wow, look at his body. They don't expect that anymore. So.
That's unbelievable, though. I mean, that's, and again, I think that speaks to just sort of your dedication to it. Actually, on that note, what was your experience going into Best of the Best with martial arts? Had you had any?
Yeah, I was an absolutely lousy martial artist, but. I learned the street martial arts from a real badass guy, so I knew all the basics. So what Simon Reed did was just clean it up, and would tell me, you know, don't lean that far because you look kind of crooked. Stand up later, put a layer. There you go. That's how to do it. So thank you. So that's how we did it.
Got it. Okay. Well, you had phenomenal flexibility for a person that did do martial arts, because a couple times you're throwing axe kicks onto people's shoulders and you're getting that leg real high in that movie. So that's pretty impressive, especially since I trained and I couldn't get my leg over my basically chin. I think a little shorter than you, though.
The only physicality in the movie that I didn't do was there was a like kick on some steps, and they wouldn't let me do it because of insurance. So they had my karate double do the step kick. Thanks to Simon Ray.
That's awesome. In addition, of course, to Simon and Philip and Chris, you also start opposite James Earl Jones. What is day one? What's the first day on the set with James Earl Jones like?
He puts you at ease right away because he has that voice. And he goes, hey, how's everybody doing? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God, there you go. CNN. And you're all impressed with his voice right away. He's just a lovely, sweet, giving, understanding grandfather of a guy. He's a wonderful, kind person. And of course, he's that actor. Oh my God, he's that actor.
I think, seeing that as a child, obviously, or younger, I just remember thinking, wow, James Earl Jones is in this. You go back and watch this as an adult, and I think there's a reason why you guys were all drawn to this, for me at least, was that this wasn't your typical martial arts film where America was the good guy, Korea or Russia or China was the bad guy, and we had to kill them. What I really think that this movie has, where the depth comes in for me, is that it's not about that. It's really just about training hard and trying to win and winning the honest way. And I like that they don't paint the Koreans in this film as the sort of stereotypical bad guy. Was that something that you saw when you first read the script, or and kind of drew you to it, or did that not come into your mind?
Well, that's something that I try to get altered right away, is I didn't want a black and white relationship. I want to do much more textured and much more honest. And they allowed that.
That's really cool. The last,
who's our producer, our boss, great guy, great understanding, great producer, Peter Strutt.
Last question I have for you about Best of the Best is, did they let you keep that amazing Team USA jacket? Please tell me you still have that.
I have a story for you.
Okay.
I kept all that stuff. They gave it all to me.
Oh, that's awesome.
I went across the United States with my then-new girlfriend. We arrive at our apartment in New York. We go upstairs for about an hour to rest, you know, to then unpack the car. In the hour upstairs, somebody broke in the car, ransacked the whole thing, took everything out of the car. I never saw one thing ever again from that movie.
Oh, no.
Isn't that sad?
That's heartbreaking to me.
You are, dude.
And as a person who lives in San Francisco where your car gets broken into constantly, we empathize. We empathize with that. I literally, if you look inside my car, you will not see one speck of anything in there specifically for that. Moving on, the next movie I really remember seeing you in, and the movie that I've seen a lot, is the 1994 film The Specialist. Now this is, again, taking you from smaller budget, more character driven movies to this big blockbuster film. And one of the things watching it again over the weekend that I was drawn to was the music in this is done by a man named John Barry. John Barry did a lot of, specifically in the 80s and 70s, James Bond films. Were you aware at about this when you're doing the movie?
I'm a music lover, and I love guys who do that. And I even have a relative who is my favorite singer songwriter. So I'm like very attuned to music. So yes, I was aware of that.
So for me, and I think this might be a little, it's not so much of a jump, but I feel like because he did all the Bond themes and because your character in this is just the perfect villain, I feel like we could say you're a Bond villain and that's okay.
Yeah.
Are we comfortable with that? Was this a fun role to dig into for you?
Well, what are we talking about?
The Specialist, Stallone.
It was the easiest bad guy I've ever played because he was such a brat.
Mm-hmm.
He was an easy two-note guy, you know, and he was only concerned about how he looked. So I got to play that, you know.
That's amazing. Was it a good experience or a fun experience rather working with Stallone and working with Sharon Stone?
So much fun. He is one of my favorite bosses I've ever had, and that he was the star of that movie, and he was the director of The Specialist, and he also
Expendables. Yeah.
So he's been my boss now a couple of times, and I love him so much as a guy, as a boss, as a director, as a writer. He can write his ass off. Damn, he's good.
Yeah, he really is. And is that something that, like, what is the vibe on a Stallone set? Is it intense?
It's kind of cut and dried. I'm the boss. Yeah. That's all there is to it. Shut up. What? I said shut up. Anyway, go ahead. He's it. In fact, I won't say who the actor was, but there was an actor in part one who was in part two, and they were having a quick run through of a scene just before they're going to shoot it with this actor. The actor said some dialogue. Sly said, cut. What are you saying? I'm saying this and this and this and this. But I didn't write that. I know. I made it better. You made it better. You're fired. So that's Sly. So Sly is your best friend if you're on his team. And if you mess around, you're out.
When it came time for the Expendables, did he reach out to you and say, we need you to be a part of this project? How did you come across that role?
Well, he had come to me years ago to play John Lithgow's movie in the snow movie.
Cliffhanger.
Oh, right.
That, but it was a schedule problem, so I couldn't do it. And then he came to me for another part. What was the other part?
Judge Dredd, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Judge Dredd, and that was also a schedule problem. So when we finally got to this, he goes, hey, don't let me down, be in my movie. And so we worked it out, and we just had fun. We had so much fun. And the only thing at all negative through the whole experience was I felt Sly picked on Jimmy Woods, and Jimmy Woods is very sensitive. So I always felt I had to protect Jimmy.
Really? James Woods being sensitive. That doesn't...
James Woods, a misunderstood great...
No.
Okay. He doesn't have our politics, but I love Fair. Him. Not who I worked with. I love him. He's so fun.
Yeah, I think it's fair to separate the politics from the actor himself. But he obviously has phenomenal screen presence, and you guys together on in The Specialist specifically was such a fun antagonistic sort of larger than life relationship. Go ahead.
But the most fun I had in the film was my relationship and the working with Rod Steiger. So close. We had so much fun.
How did he get Rod Steiger for that? How does Stallone do this stuff?
They made the offer and he said yes, simple. And he and I made great friends. We did go out to eat after we got through with the show a lot. We hung out. I loved him so dearly.
That's such a fun bonus.
A great mind, but a great person.
He was yeah. Sick. And you guys filmed in Miami for that, right?
We sure did.
Oh, that's so cool. Moving along, obviously, to you know, when we mentioned that we were having you on the show, of course, a lot of people, their touchstone for you was The Dark Knight, which was the 2008 Christopher Nolan film that was the follow-up, of course, to Batman Begins. I'm not telling anyone anything they don't know. How did this role come about?
I had to audition.
Really?
I went in and I read for it. And then 4 full weeks passed. So I thought, well, I don't have this part. And then suddenly my agent got a call. Is Eric available? Blah blah blah. Because that's when we're shooting. Oh, okay. He's in the movie. Well, yeah, he's in the movie. Oh,
okay.
And so it was like that. I'm the only guy in that movie who doesn't have any billing and had to audition.
That's insane to me.
That's what happened.
That's crazy to me. Like when you when you get the script for this, do you get the full script for this, or is Chris Nolan like, we're only giving you the scenes that you're in?
No, you did not get the whole script.
You didn't even get any of the script, actually. John Papsidera cast it, and you got dummy sides from another
one. Really?
When we got the script, it was called Rory's First Kiss. It was red and watermarked. So you couldn't, in those days, there was faxing, right, and Xeroxing. You couldn't copy it. It wouldn't go through.
It would come out like too dark, yeah.
Yeah. Well, not even dark. There's something about the kind of red they use. It would just be blank.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it was very top secret. Everyone knew what we were shooting anyway. I mean, all the said Rory's First Kiss. People were like, Batman, you know. So, he never saw anything.
That's crazy. So you go, how many days do you recall how many days you shot on that film?
I was on that film for a total of 4 months, but I shot like maybe 20 days tops.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I went back and watched a few of the scenes. It's pretty fresh in my mind. I've seen The Dark Knight probably 10 times, but you're in the coolest scene in the whole movie. And it's the scene, of course, when we first get the introduction to the Joker with Heath Ledger and you're sitting around the table with the rest of the mob bosses. Was that an intense scene to film?
It actually wasn't. Everybody asked this question because it was real actor's tour de force for Heath. But what it was we had all been told, stay away from Heath. He's so many character. Oh my God, you can't approach him. Well, okay, stay away from him. He shows up. He was so relaxed. He was so cool. He went through his first run through of a 3-page speech. He does a speech. He turns us all and he goes, how am I doing? He said, you're doing great, dude. And he was just wonderful, likable, approachable, accessible, sweet. And we kicked its ass and it was nothing to it.
You guys crushed that scene. So your character specifically, Sal Maroni, were you drawing on any of your other past characters to kind of play this, the capo da capo, this mob boss character?
No, Sal was my birthday candle. Sal is on top of everything.
Because and you feel that. So there's moments in this movie where all of this outrageous stuff's happening and they have, you know, I think Michael Jai White is in it as well, right. as a bunch of other great actors. They're all freaking out. They cut back to you and you're just like, eh. Was that a purposeful choice on your part?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
well, oh man.
I had the chance to be, you know, the coolest bad guy there is and wanted to be. That's all.
That's phenomenal. And obviously you got to do scenes with everyone in that movie. And I have to imagine was doing the scenes with Bale, was that intense as well? Or were those, what were the vibe of those?
It was fun. The script itself is so much fun, and Wally shot it so cool, and it was just you knew you were part of something very special.
At any point when you're acting opposite a guy in a bat costume, do you have trouble staying in character at that point, or are you just this is the reality of where we're at?
That's a great question, because only in rehearsal you go, this is so unreal. This is, how can I believe this? You actually ask yourself that in rehearsal, but then in the tape you forget. You like go with it, you know.
That's awesome.
In the rehearsal, you do ask yourself that. This is weird. He's got a leather face.
So in rehearsals, he would be wearing partial. Like, are you talking about rehearsals on set, or are you talking about rehearsals? Like, no. So you're seeing him in the costume, and you're just like, this is we're in this.
Yeah.
I guess it probably helps that there was a film before this that did very, very well.
It is really funny, because we had one discussion, I don't know if you remember, with Michael Caine about it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he has such a great attitude anyway. Uh-huh. I don't know if you've read his book, but it's great. He's like, basically, he says, look what we're doing. I mean, we're children playing pretend, because it's one thing to just act, but you kind of forget. It's a little like nudity.
Yeah.
They're so careful. They close the set, whatever. After a few minutes, you forget that you don't have any clothes on, yeah. You know? And all of us were staying in the same hotel, and everybody had their kids there. And Christian is just so far from that character. And so, you know, it would be, there were some giggles. There were times that you just crack up just over the ridiculousness of it.
I mean, I have to imagine, I mean, you look at the cast of this, and you've got just so many phenomenal actors, yourself included, that are a part of a Batman movie. I mean, Michael Caine is in this, and he's playing it straight. Like, it's not done for laughs, right? I have to imagine that's the strength of the casting director, of just putting everyone together and realizing that that's, you know, everyone's going to buy in.
Director in a situation like that, it's a real, because I am casting director, it's a real collaboration. You have, nobody's going to tell Chris Nolan no,
right?
And Papsadero really is like a producer and director himself, so those two guys just listen, they could make their dream list and everybody's going to show up. It's very different than casting in real life.
That's crazy. Yeah. I have to imagine it's still that way to this day. He's still running strong. And one day Tenet will come out and we'll all watch it. Unfortunately, movies having a little trouble making it to the theaters these days, but that's understandable. dialing it back just a little bit. I had the opportunity to watch a few of your first movies this weekend, and I was really, really blown away by them. And this is, I think, a lot for a lot of the other generations going back and watching some of the movies from the late 70s and early 80s. It's like stepping back into a time portal, and it doesn't always translate. But for me, these two specific movies did. I watched King of the Gypsies and Runaway Train. And I actually want to start with Runaway Train, if you're okay with that. The movie starts, and I know not too much about this movie, and it says written by Akira Kurosawa. Was this a big deal for you back in the day?
Yeah, and the first copy of the script I got was 180 pages long. It was all description, very little dialogue. And I read the whole thing and got through and went, wow, who's going to make this movie? And then they offered me the part, and the part was a big, tough, dumb thug. But he was in for statutory rape. And I said, you can't get away with that, because he's a horrible person for statutory rape. And I said, no, he has to be innocent. So I'll make him talk higher and have a southern accent if I can do that. Can I talk like this? And the director who was Russian said, whatever you want, Eric. So, you know, I like making him sweet as opposed to nasty.
Yeah.
But it's the only way that you get, well, you know, she said she was 18. I didn't know she was 12. I mean, that's the only way you get away with that.
Right.
Like, you're just a bad guy, you know? So.
Well, and they did the same for John Voight's character too, right? He was a safecracker I read somewhere on that piece of trivia that he originally was supposed to be written as a murderer. And he wanted, I guess, someone somewhere along the line said, let's make him a safecracker, so he's a little bit more appealing to the audience and you can root for him.
Also, but, about John in that role, John is almost 6'2". He might be 6'2". And he weighed 160 pounds when we shot that. He had on a full body suit.
Really?
That, not him. He weighed what I weigh now, and I'm underweight, and I'm only 5'10". And he's 6'2", and he had on a bodysuit, and he pulled it off, and you thought he was a big monster, didn't you?
You did. Well, the first time you see him, he's welded into a prison where there's sort of like Star Wars-like mist coming out everywhere, like smoke, like, you know, and he's doing push-ups. And when he stands up, the way they shot him was he just looks like a hulking monster in this film. And I think, I mean, largely this is what I think speaks to the power of the cast here, is that you play it so well opposite of him, being slightly more innocent and demure, and it makes him seem so much more menacing, specifically when you guys, you know, you get into it toward the end of the film. Was there a discussion with him of saying like how did the rehearsals go for that?
John and I talked very intensely and all the time during rehearsals. We had like a half a dozen rehearsals, and we talked very, very legitimately, very straight on, very, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, blah, blah, blah. How about this? No, don't do that because this. Okay, yeah, you're right, thanks. And we had like great talks, and we would just kill it together. We had so much fun working together. He's also a guy that you don't talk in politics with. But, and I never did. And I had the best relationship with him you can imagine.
I'll take care of it.
So somebody said
costume.
And it was a fantastic relationship. And he is a fantastic actor. Oh my God, is he fantastic.
He's phenomenal. I mean, you both just disappear in those roles together. And it's okay. For a movie that's largely just the two of you in a small train compartment, it's absolutely fascinating to watch. And of course, Rebecca De Mornay joins later.
It was hard to shoot. Those spaces are hard to work in with the crew. And especially, it was always moving. So when they say cut, you're still doing this. No, cut. Oh, okay, sorry. Okay.
Well, that was the other thing, the question I wanted to ask you about it was, this stands out to me as looking like it wasn't a particularly pleasant shoot from conditions. Was it pretty grueling?
Well, I don't like to complain doing make-believe, you know?
Sure.
Because our conditions are not horrible, but it was hard. And it was hard because I was always uncomfortable. The only good thing is so is my character. So it's a,
and so you just used it.
Yeah. And John was just such a pleasure as an actor to work with. I can't say enough nice things about him.
That's awesome. That's really good to hear. The other movie I wanted to talk briefly about was one of your first roles that you got recognized for was The King of the Gypsies. This movie starts, and I start seeing names pop up on screen, and I'm like, when this movie has a deep lineup of talent in it, was this intimidating to step on set with all of these amazing actors?
I was scared to death every single day I shot that film.
Because you're the lead and you're a relative newcomer. And I have to imagine at this point, Susan Sarandon and Brooke Shields, Annie Potts, were they relative newcomers as well at that time, or were they established?
They were veterans, and they were confident, they were attractive, and they were ready to work. And I was like, it was my first movie. So I'm like, can we talk about this? And everybody was like, you know, sure, we can talk about it, but let's shoot it. Oh, all right, sure, okay.
Had Brooke done Pretty Baby already?
Yes, she had.
She may have, yeah.
They were all in superstars in their own right. And then there was me.
That must have been, and you're the lead, obviously. You're in majority of the shots here. How do you navigate that?
Like learning how to swim. I just jumped in and went.
Yeah. Was there, now, so, and then the other question I had for you was, I mean, how do you go about doing any research for a character who is an ex-gypsy in New York in the late 70s? Is this an easy, like right now, I would not know where to go to speak with real gypsies in San Francisco.
Well, it's really easy now with the internet, but at the time, people don't know this, but there are tons of gypsies in New York, and they're different families, and they're like mafia families. They are a group who stick together, and I went and I live with them, and they tried to present themselves in a very nice light. And so I would accept that's how they wanted to be portrayed, and just had a great time learning their lives. They have bizarre, fascinating, wonderful, valuable, interesting lives.
That very much comes across in the film as well, where it almost reads as a fantasy movie in parts, but you can tell you're like somebody somewhere is drawing from real experiences with gypsies, because you can't make half of this stuff up.
Well, you have to remember who wrote it. Frank Pearson, an Academy Award winning writer who wrote fantastic stuff. I mean,
Stars Born.
Oh, right.
One of the Stars Borns. What's the Al Pacino movie by the Bang Robert?
Dog Day Afternoon,
Cat Blue. I mean, all these great movies he wrote, and he wrote Gypsies. He was a phenomenal writer, and he really captured that whole understanding of that world.
So you go from that film to Star 80 afterward. And that character is a 180 degree turn.
No, my next film was Raggedy Man.
Okay.
Actually, my next film was called Paul's Case. It was for the American Short Story series for PBS. And I'm so proud of that movie because it's such a hard part, Paul's Case, mm-hmm. by Willa Cather. I did that next. Then I did Raggedy Man with Sissy Spacek.
Oh, right.
For her husband. And then I did Star 80.
And then you did Star 80, and then you did The Pope of Greenwich Village after that, right? Like right afterward?
Yeah.
So those characters were at the time, were you just looking for any interesting character? Because specifically, like when you go back and watch Star 80, that character is very different than the character David in the King of Gypsies. Was that something that you were looking for, or do you just get material and you say, I think I can, you know, sink my teeth into this character?
No, that just came up. And my manager at the time, you know, knew my heroes were Bob Fosse and Hal Ashby. And he said, Bob Fosse's coming out with a new film. It's going to be based on the murder of Dorothy Stratton in 1980. And the role of her husband there, they have a huge cattle call for everybody's coming in to read for it. And he won't give any offers, only readings. So everybody has to read. So I said, great, I'm going for it. And I read the script. We got a copy of the script. I don't know how. We got a copy of the script, and I read the script. I did not like the part at all. I thought he was very cliche bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I thought it not really fun to play. But Bob Fosse was the boss. So I'm going to go for this sucker. I'm going to really try to do this. And so I had 5 auditions. And after the 5th audition, he said to me, so, want to make a movie? I said, yeah, with you? Yeah. He goes, okay, this is going to be hard. I said, I'm ready, buddy. He said, okay. Then the first day on the set, he makes Mariel cry. And she leaves, and she's gone for an hour or so. And he says to me, okay, you're the man. I may kick your ass sometimes. Don't cry on me. I said, okay. And we had a great relationship. And he and Marilyn, you know, never had another problem. But he was tough. He was a hard guy to work for, because he knew what he wanted and why. And if you couldn't do it, what is wrong with you? And so it was the ultimate test to work for Fosse.
That must have been very intimidating, specifically because Bob Fosse at the time was very, like, at the height of his powers when he was making this, right? I mean, he'd already done Cabaret and all that jazz.
Well, that jazz was the last film before Star 80.
Funny because I go back, I've heard of the film before. I've never seen it. My wife, of course, grew up in LA as a professional dancer, and so she's seen all these films. But I literally was like, I tried to queue it up. I can't find it anywhere. I might have to buy the Blu-ray to All That Jazz, because I had no idea. First off, I had no idea it was Roy Scheider, right? No. Am I getting that? Yeah. As playing the sort of Bob Fosse character. Super fascinating. Definitely something I have to watch. But definitely when you see him, or if you've watched, I don't know if you've watched the series Fosse Verdon at all on FX, but he seems like a very complicated man, Bob Fosse was.
To say the least. When you work for those kind of men, here's what happens. You realize they are a genius. Now, something happens when you work with a genius. Two things happen. You realize that you're not one, and they are so unusual. They are so hard to find. And once you find them, dig in, because they're going to walk away. They have stuff to do. And he was the most complete, fantastic education I've ever gotten artistically. And he also taught me more about myself than I've ever learned before or since.
We have just a few more minutes left with you. I hope that's okay. I know we're going a little long, but I wanted to ask you a couple more questions, and we have some questions from the audience as well. Sure. I know a lot of people are wanting me to ask about your performance in Dead or Alive, which was a movie based in 2006. You did based on a video game. Did you have any context for the game going into this at all?
They offered me so much money and a trip to China. So I didn't even read it. I got the offer. Went, yes, for that there. Yes, I'll do that. And then I read the script and went, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
And had fun.
It was fun.
The only thing hard about it was I lost a hip. And so I was a bit of a crippled journey.
Oh, that's tough. That's gotta be hard with long shooting days.
Oh, it was awful. But I got through it.
That's awesome. That is the perfect response for that. And what I was hoping for. Hey, everyone, we want to take a quick break to tell you about our amazing sponsors. The first of which bringing you this episode is MeUndies. Have you ever seriously considered the underwear that graces your nether regions? Well, you have now. You've got some important stuff down there, you know. Thankfully, MeUndies has, which is why they're changing the game with softer than soft, sustainable undies in fun prints like unicorns and lots of colors so you can be totally comfortable being you. Inside and out. You guys have heard us talk about MeUndies constantly. Kevin's wearing them right now. Tim would only wear MeUndies if it were actually legal on Twitch, but unfortunately we've called up Mr. Twitch and said, can Tim just wear his underwear? And they said, unfortunately, no, that breaks their policy, but doesn't break our policy, because our policy is to wear awesome underwear that's super comfortable, super soft, and comes in awesome print colors. Greg, I'm sure, is wearing them right now as well. We swear by MeUndies. You, if you haven't tried them, you definitely should. You know what's the worst possible thing ever? An empty underwear drawer, because it's all in the dirty laundry. Well, good thing you can get a MeUndies membership and eradicate that terribleness forever. A MeUndies membership is a monthly sponsorship that sends new pairs right to your door so you can keep your undies drawer stocked fresh and fun. Plus, with member access to site-wide savings and exclusive sales, you can easily and affordably build a quality collection of super soft undies over time. And that's one heck of an undie upgrade if you ask us. MeUndies offers matching pairs where you and your partner can order undies with the same exact print. In other words, match your bottom half to your better half. And of course, the great thing is MeUndies are offered in a giant range of sizes from extra small to 4XL. Here's the offer, ladies and gentlemen. MeUndies is a great offer for the listeners of this fine podcast. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, especially because they offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get your 15% off your first order, free shipping, and that 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. Next up, we have ExpressVPN. Let me tell you, I know most of you are probably thinking, why don't you just use incognito mode when you search for things, right? Let me tell you something. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what you use or how many times you clear your browser history. Your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. So if you're out there at night when no one's looking and you're searching for that stuff that you don't want people to think about or to know that you're searching for, and you know exactly what I'm talking about because we all do it, you got to use ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter if you get your internet from Verizon or Comcast or whatever your local ISP offerings are. ISPs in the US can legally sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secured server so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. And if you're worried about any of the sites that you're visiting, you shouldn't be, because you should just use ExpressVPN and search freely and have a great time. ExpressVPN also keeps all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most of the time, I don't even realize we're using ExpressVPN. We don't even know it's on. It runs seamlessly in the background, and it is so easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is available on all of your devices, from phones to computers, even your smart TV. So there's no excuse for you not to be using it. Protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit my exclusive link, expressvpn.com/morning, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/morning. expressvpn.com/morning to learn more. Lastly, we have HelloFresh. You guys have heard about this. Oh, we've talked about this a lot. Gia cooks for Tim constantly. And one of these days when the pandemic's over, I'm just going to go over and steal their food, because HelloFresh gets fresh pre-measured ingredients and mouthwatering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store, which now are just terrible, and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. HelloFresh, of course, offers so many recipes to choose from each week to help you break out of your recipe rut. There's something for everyone, including low-calorie, vegetarian, and family-friendly recipes every week. HelloFresh offers fresh, high-quality ingredients every week for a super fun experience. Let me tell you, this is very stress-free and effortless, especially if you're Tim, because Gia just makes it for you. HelloFresh offers contactless delivery to your doorstep for easy home cooking with family. Over 90% of the ingredients are sourced directly from growers to ensure the freshest recipes are delivered to your door. HelloFresh, of course, cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips, so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes or even 20 minutes with their quick recipe options. You can also, right now, you can save up to 28% by using HelloFresh versus your grocery store shopping trips. And who doesn't want to save money right now, especially with a lot of us out of work? HelloFresh pre-portioned ingredients mean there's less prep for you and less food wasted. The packaging HelloFresh uses to ship to your food is almost entirely made from recyclable and or recycled content. HelloFresh's carbon footprint is now 25% lower than store-bought grocery-made meals. And that source is from the University of Michigan, in case you were wondering. Let's see. Keep your fridge stocked by adding extra protein or sides like garlic bread to your weekly order. Easily change your delivery days of or food preferences and skip a week whenever you need. Feeding the whole family has never been easier with large boxes, box sizes for more servings and more savings. HelloFresh is committed to making fresh, delicious food available now more than ever, and has taken extra steps to keep its employees and customers safe. HelloFresh donated over 2.5 million meals to charity in 2019, and this year it's stepping up their food donations amid the coronavirus crisis. One of the things I always love is touching base with Tim for this ad and seeing what Gia is making for him. And let me tell you, the old faithful that she makes for him all the time is the shroom and Swiss pork burgers with potato wedges and creamy honey Dijon dipper. Now, if that doesn't sound good, maybe you just don't like life. Because to me, looking at a picture of this bad boy, it's enough for me to risk going over to Tim's house and stealing all of his food. But I don't really have to, because I can use HelloFresh. They have great deals right now. Here it is right now. Let's see. Go to if you want to take advantage of this amazing deal. Go to HelloFresh.com/80morning and use code 80morning to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, here's that deal again. Go to HelloFresh.com/80morning and use code 80morning to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. You know, if Tim's loving this and G is doing it, it's super easy and super fun. So you definitely got to go over and take advantage of this. HelloFresh, we swear by them. We love them very much. Now back to the show. Eric, now, of course, is the time of the show that our audience gets to write in. We call this the friend zone. These are questions that if you guys are out there and you want to write in future friend zone questions, you can go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny, back us at the $5 or above tier, and you can ask questions just like Brandon Jackson did. Brandon Jackson Shorts did. He said, hey, Nick and Eric, mostly you, Doctor Who question. What's it been like coming back to the role of the Master after over 20 years? Also, any hints about your upcoming role in the anniversary? He says he can't wait for your upcoming solo series. It all sounds great. Now, this is a project you're currently working on, right? Which is the audio series?
Right.
Big finish.
And if they ever bring back you know, Doctor Who, I want to do the Master again. Tell everybody that I said that. Okay.
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 Love it.
Familiar. I feel like we know him on social media or something, but you know, that's neither here nor there. Okay.
Probably. People our viewers tend to be pretty vocal and pretty positive about everyone, which is great. We're very fortunate with that. You've done a lot of VO work as well. You've done some work for Justice League Unlimited and things like that. Is it a nice welcome break to just go into a air conditioned studio and read?
It's so much fun. You know, you don't have to shave, you don't have to wear a clean shirt. You can just show up and it's just fun and everybody's relaxed, nobody cares, and it's all about how it sounds.
And did you finish work on this before the pandemic hit, or are you guys still in the middle of the stuff?
We're still doing stuff.
Yeah, everything's
on hold.
The one that you're talking about, the one that Brandon brought up, mm-hmm. We do that like twice a year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the producer comes over here from England and assembles as many people from the cast as he can. And it's pretty fantastic.
Plus that's gotta be fun.
We were doing all the conventions and everything. He's done a lot of VO work now from home on other things.
Yeah. That's cool.
Isn't that cool?
Do they ship you the equipment, or do you just kind of have everything there?
The equipment.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's really fun. Yeah. Next question we have is from P.S. Wee. It says, Eric, thank you for being on the show. Is it weird? He says, it is weird that for many of us, our first exposure to you was early 2000s music videos. What's your favorite one where you were part of, and how did you get involved? He says his specific favorite was when you appeared in The Killers' Mr. Brightside. He says, hope everyone is well and safe out there. Yeah, this was, I've been looking through, I'm like, you did a lot of music videos back in the day.
Well, here's what happened. See this guy here? Keaton. Yeah. Keaton Simons, he's my favorite singer-songwriter. And
he's a guitar hero. So.
Okay, love it.
Anyway, what was the question?
So how'd you get into music videos?
Oh yeah, the Killers called me, would you be in our video? And I said no right away. And then Keaton calls me and he goes, so mom said you just turned down the Killers. I said, who are the Killers? That thing you turned down. I said, oh yeah, right, yeah, it was a music video. You have to do it, dude. I said, no, I don't want to do videos. No, you have to do it. You're a great band and you have to do it. You have to be a part of them. Eric, I'm telling you, you have to do the video. Call them back, say you want to be in it. So I did, I called them back. I said, look, my stepson said that I made a mistake. Can I be in your video? And they said, okay, sure. Then I did their video for Sophie Mueller, great director. And out of that, all these videos came offering me. And so I got a whole new audience that was all under 14 overnight. Who knew?
Awesome. That's so fun. Our final question is a bit long, but it comes from Gibby, who says, stick with me here. He says, in 1997, I rented a movie called It's My Party, and it broke my heart. He was raised very conservative in an area in Western Maryland. After he says pissing away an opportunity at college, he ended up in the joining the Air Force. And in 1996, when he was 20, despite meeting a couple of his gay friends in college, he said, I was dealing with and unlearning the biases that had been taught to me since childhood. And at the time in the military, don't ask, don't tell was still in effect. He says, in 1997, stationed just south of San Francisco, I rented It's My Party, a movie starring you, Eric Roberts, of whom he loved from Best of the Best. After watching your portrayal of a man facing his death on his terms, resolute in his sexuality and having deep love for his friends, he said, it deeply changed me. It was a moment when my childhood conditioning broke and solidified my belief that different people are just that, different people, worthy of love and respect, no matter what everyone thinks of them. So I guess my question would be, what movie or piece of quote entertainment changed you in that way? And he says, cheers, Gibby. Basically, I think he just wanted to say thank you for taking that
role. What a long, cool question.
Yeah.
The movie that I am in that did that for me was called Star 80, because I realized that the guy that I was actually playing is a very common guy. We all know them. And when I realized that, I got kind of an understanding of mankind I'd never had before. So that happened out of Star 80 for me.
If I could just say something.
Sure.
That was beautiful. I'm glad that you picked it and that you read it. I was going to bring up It's My Party, one of our favorite films for sure. And I don't know what kind of distribution deal they made, because this is something you'd be seeing now on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, and you're not, which is too bad. Because even though there's some things about it that are dated, it was a true story that took place when we hadn't made quite as much progress as we have, which is very little, but you know, we got a long way to go. It still absolutely has had that influence on many people, as it should. And I'm, you know, my daughter is gay, and she her wife and child are outside in our swimming pool right now. And you know, our family, we're a bunch of artists. We never, you know, we just love her. We never cared. There's gay people on both sides of the family and whatever. But it was very different journey for her wife and their family. And I'm much prouder of them than I am of us. They had to learn something and expand, and they have done so beautifully. And to watch the transformation just is mind-blowing. So I really hope, with the person whose letter you just wrote, that he's maybe revisited some of the people who were torturing him earlier in his life. And maybe they've had their eyes open. But you're right, film, television has the power, music has the power to do that, to really be transformative. It's pretty incredible. And so, you know, many movies have done that for us. It's hard to think of them at that moment, but lots, you know, about various different issues. That's pretty great.
I agree. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a very rare treat for me, and I've really, really enjoyed having your time. I'm sorry I went a little bit over, thank you. And I hope you guys, Eric, I hope you guys continue to do work into the next four decades. Oh, I really, really do.
Great interviewer. Thank you.
I appreciate that. And thank you for making such wonderful films that I could enjoy all weekend. And my wife thanks you very much for your hair and makeup very much for having the amazing hair.
You guys are back in the studio when you finally decide to give your wife a break and go back to the studio to work. We'll come up. We love Northern
Beautiful.
California.
We love Beautiful. You. We would absolutely love to have you guys. Of course, guys, if you're out there watching, please remember to subscribe to this channel. If you're watching here with us on Twitch, remember, if you have Amazon Prime, you get Twitch Prime. You guys can use that to give us a free $5. If not, please give it to someone that you are watching on Twitch who's doing a great job, because everyone's working from home right now, and it is not without its challenges. Eric, Eliza, thank you guys again for joining me, and we hope to see you soon.
Bye. It's great.